Hello, everybody, and welcome to the History of Actor Training in the British Drama School podcast. This is the first one of these I've made for a while. Sorry, it's been a busy time back to term and back to teaching. I'm aiming to make maybe one of these a month for the next year. So I'm going to slow down a little bit just because of other pressures. I hope that's okay. We did manage to do 54 last year. So there's a substantial sort of back catalogue to check out if you're interested. If you're enjoying these podcasts at all, there are three ways to support them. You could leave a review somewhere. You could drop me an email on robertprice1869@gmail.com, or you could hit the little heart symbol on the Apple site or on the Buzzsprout site or various sites and leave a donation. That would be hugely gratefully received. This week or this episode, I'm going to read a fairly substantial paper, reading comment, which concerns the trajectory of the drama school in terms of its relationship with university drama departments. Now, this is a sort of a complicated subject, and all sorts of things come up. It's on my mind at the moment. So, as always, these podcasts, I'm sort of following my own rabbits down holes. But I've been sort of thinking the past few weeks about just sort of where we've landed in terms of the relationship between the drama school and higher education. And what's essentially happened is that the drama school has landed right in the middle of higher education. And there may be good things about that, and there may be some things that are not so good. I think I would probably tend to think that most of them are not so good, and perhaps not in the most predictable way. Well, I don't know. Maybe I am very predictable. Also, interestingly, this week the Discover Uni website published its NSS results in a very sort of readable form. The NSS is fascinating to me in all kinds of ways, because I see it partly as something which has some value. It indicates something about student experience, which I think is a legitimate question. But also, and this is sort of bringing us right back to where we're going, the NSS is designed for university students. And I would wonder if it's the most useful tool for gathering really helpful information from graduating students at a conservatoire. I don't think it is. And I think what starts to happen is that something like the NSS starts to generate its own realities. It starts to organize the way we think. So students, for instance, to give a little example, students are asked about feedback on the NSS form. And those results are historically not the best results. So then drama schools panic about that, and they start to train their staff in feedback. But of course, the question itself is complicated. What feedback means in a drama school is not perhaps what feedback means when you've written an essay. I mean, probably a more useful question for drama school students would be, have you received helpful notes? Something like that. It occurs to me. The thing, though, I was going to say was on the Discover Uni website, finally, what's happened is that the number of BA courses where you can study acting has now passed the 100 mark. So there are now more than 100 BA courses in acting in the United Kingdom at 70-odd institutions. Those 70-odd institutions, I would guess that 50 of those are not anything that would be called a drama school or a conservatoire or an acting academy. So essentially, this sort of process, which has been going on for a while, which I might call something like the deregulation of actor training in the United Kingdom, is sort of proceeding afoot. Of those over 100 BA courses, of course, there would also be, I actually have no idea how many MA courses and MFA courses and foundation courses in acting. So the numbers of people we're sort of producing every year who are training to be actors is vast and growing. And that may be a wonderful thing. I don't know. But it must have implications. Also this week, there was an article in The Guardian of a very sort of familiar type about actor training, which raised, it was a very, very poor article. It was sort of a horrifying piece of journalism, I think, partly because it was clearly just cobbled together from somebody reading the stage. So it sort of read like a, I don't know, a sort of high school essay, really, more than a piece of journalism, and had absolutely nothing original or interesting to say. It rehashed some very sort of familiar arguments and questions about the drama school. The drama school is elitist, but do we want to throw the baby out of the bathwater in terms of training? Why can't young people be heard from the back of the gods? All of that sort of nonsense, really, or at least a debate which needs to move on, but we just seem to go round and round and get nowhere. Anyway, so sort of profoundly depressing, really. I mean, quite good-natured in its attempt to sort of stage a debate, to be objective and sort of even-handed, but in a very, very sophomoric, I think, is quite a complimentary adjective way. Also, just before we move on, one other interesting thing that I noticed this week, I was looking at the Federation of Drama Schools hallmarks. In the paper we're about to hear, we hear something about the genesis and development of accreditation processes for the drama school, something which some people are calling for a return to, which is fascinating. Calling for a return to in a fairly naive way and a slightly confused one, I think, but nonetheless, a debate that might be worth having if we ever have debates. But the Federation for Drama Schools is to some degree the sort of the latest iteration of a number of organisations, which includes the Conference of Drama Schools, the National Council for Drama Training, and Drama UK. And the Federation for Drama Schools is what we have now, and the Federation for Drama Schools is not an accreditation body. At all. It doesn't accredit. It's a sort of club, really. A club with hallmarks and values. And by following those hallmarks and values, the small number of institutions inside it, which are entirely what you would expect, sort of fulfill a requirement to be a member of this organization. What I noticed was that there's been a change from a stipulated amount of hours to a much more sort of vague idea about a sort of considerable number of hours in terms of training. Again, all of this is adding up to something kind of fascinating, I think, which is that we're changing what we think an acting training should be, and perhaps not always in the spaces that we would like to debate, I think. So questions of diversity, questions of inclusion, questions, other questions of equity, questions of sort of appropriate ethic when it comes to things like intimate content. All of those subjects, I think, need to be discussed. But I don't hear anyone really talking about larger class sizes or what happens if you import a language almost wholesale from a completely different world and then force a very particular creature like the drama school to start parroting it back at you. What happens if you start insisting that acting teachers in porter cabins in conservatoires have to have PhDs? And why? And why are people in drama schools forced to go through this ridiculous thing of applying for fellowship of the Higher Education Academy, which essentially means that you need to develop a skill to write sort of edu-nonsense, really for no reason, simply in order to acquire this fairly meaningless stamp of approval from some sort of anonymous body at considerable time and expense, actually, including to the institutions. Lambda went through this ridiculous process where most of the staff went through applications for the fellowships. I think the cost to the institution was something like £500 per staff member. Most of those staff members were subsequently made redundant or left. So all of that money, and many of them struggled or failed or finally succeeded to get through this sort of strange hoop that had been set up, really for nothing, for nothing. And that money then means there's less money for students to have tutors, or you need to increase class sizes. So I've mentioned this before, but I have a horrible feeling that the drama school is sort of eating itself, and it's eating itself – or turning into a sort of pyramid selling scheme. And it's doing that partly because of its relationship with higher education and the university. Now, I suspect the university has gone through similar things. I've got nothing against universities. This is not in any way a criticism of the university. And I think, in fact, I know that academics and lecturers and students in universities feel the same way. So I guess it's just that higher education has gone in this very particular direction in this country, and the drama school has been caught up in the slipstream of that, almost like a sort of a sinking passenger liner, and everyone's being sort of dragged down into the same whirling vortex of idiocy together. So there's nothing sort of sinister or pernicious about universities. Everyone's just trying to get by. Anyway, sorry, that's my opinion, isn't it? It's not really a history. So let's examine something a little bit more historical. So the article I'm going to read and occasionally comment on is called "Falling Off a Wall: Degrees of Change in British Actor Training" by Ben Frankham. Ben Frankham is still an active academic and I think theatre maker. I don't know Ben, but I really like his paper. It's completely useful. So sometimes people contact me who are doing research in actor training. You need to read Ben Frankham's paper. It's superb. The abstract says, "This paper attempts an anatomical history of theatre education and training in Britain since the 1970s. The paper itself dates from the early 2000s. So it doesn't bring us up to where we are now. And that's why it's particularly helpful, actually, because it brings us up to where we were in the early noughties. It notes that, historically, the system for training actors within the internationally renowned drama school sector... one of the great ironies of all of this, isn't it? Endless irony, is that these institutions are internationally renowned. I remember rather sort of, I don't know, comically, being involved in an internal conference, where we were asked to try and name a world-class institution that RADA could somehow aspire to. And clearly, a world-class institution, rightly or wrongly, is RADA. It was sort of an obscene ludicrousness. I can't think of a more, as I say, rightly or wrongly, renowned world-class institution. Really didn't need to be thinking of others. Probably needed to be thinking about other things. It notes, was defined by a clear link with the theatre industry and corresponding isolation from drama theatre studies as taught within the universities. So, interesting. So it's saying that the drama school is something that has a very clear link to the theatre industry. It's from the 1970s, isn't it? So around then. Despite changes in the qualifications offered by drama schools, the essential definition of training within the industry and outside the higher education system has remained to this day. But the industry and the academic discipline of drama and theatre studies have changed radically. The paper looks forward to a gradual refocusing of theatre training in Britain, bringing together the complementary skills of the drama school and the university in an attempt to offer an intellectual lead to the future of theatre, rather than the traditional practice of reflecting established ideas. A completely sort of fascinating abstract. So Ben Frankham, back in the early noughties, is hopeful that we will sort of breed the drama school and the university together somewhat and produce something better. I'm not sure that's what's happened. I'm not sure if Ben Frankham listens to this podcast. I'd be curious to see what he thinks looking forward. Maybe in some ways, maybe some useful things have happened. I'm also not sure if we think about the history of the drama school in terms of the Michel Saint-Denis type of drama school, the drama centre. I'm not sure that those schools were simply feeding the industry in a neoliberal kind of way. Is that the right term? I think it is. So I don't know. I don't know about that, Ben. But, I mean, it's a perfectly reasonable point, of course. So here we go. History and difference. Drama schools, universities, and the industry in the 1970s. 50 years ago. On the surface, the British system and structure for the training of actors, as established in the 1970s, is beautifully simple, clear, and above all, distinct. It's a nice sentence, isn't it? It is defined by the notion that training for actors is inextricably linked to the theatre industry and is determined by the pragmatic needs of that industry. This notion is in turn a corollary of the historical 20th century notion that drama is an art, but theatre is an industry. I'll try and sort of, rather than saying that's a quote, I'll try and do a quotey voice. That's a quote. That, regardless of artistic innovation and experimentation and changes in style and form within the drama, the theatre, the actual doing of it, has remained bound by certain rules and structures. And those engaged with the doing of it must learn the rules and the structures. They must learn the trade. Consequently, acting is a craft, a job, and a training in acting is not primarily about cultural enrichment. That's a quote from Simon Callow. The purpose of training is, therefore, to be industry-led, preparing students for careers open to a trained workforce in an industry which is also, occasionally, an art. Another quote. Thus, the drama school would see itself as part of an industry providing a kind of industrial apprenticeship. As the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School prospectus for the year 2000 puts it, we regard a student's first day here as the first day of his or her career. Just me here. Just curious how this sort of the industry thing was something that has been heard a lot in the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years. And the industry has become somehow, within sort of debates about the drama school, within the specific debate, somehow a sort of an entire good, as if the industry was sort of, was wonderful and the drama school was conservative and redundant. I'm not sure I buy that. Anyway, it feels like from the early noughties, Ben Frankham is thinking in a different way. Back to the article. The theatre industry of the 1970s itself had clear parameters. Cultural policy in the 1970s, more or less unchanged since the post-war settlement, reflected the modernist, liberal humanist view that the artist has something special to offer society, and that art puts people in touch with universal values. It defined a theatre industry that was subsidised, a service industry, preserving a tradition that was closer to the church than the marketplace. Theatres in major towns and cities throughout Britain, cushioned by grants from the Arts Council and local authorities, produced a broad range of plays that fitted neatly into the defined British canon, the bedrock of the English acting style. From Webber Douglas, which closed shortly afterwards. In spite of clear parameters, the industry at the beginning of the 1970s was concerned with ever-increasing unemployment within the acting profession, a concern naturally shared by the drama schools. The industry was concerned. People were concerned. So if you read newspapers at the time, yes, this is true. I think people were concerned, including drama schools were concerned, as he says. In 1972, the Conference of Drama Schools, an informal organisation set up in 1969 comprising the principal schools engaged in training actors, joined forces with other organisations within the industry, including Equity, the Actors' Union, to express great concern at the haphazard way in which so many train for and enter the acting profession. So really, the Federation of Drama Schools is really the CDS. It's really the Conference of Drama Schools. Isn't it? Sort of an informal organisation set up. So we went right back to the CDS. This joint committee invited the Calusta Gulbenkian Foundation to set up an inquiry into professional training for drama. The report of this inquiry was published in 1975, entitled Going on the Stage, and has done much to reinforce the notion of actor apprenticeships and to provide a coherent system that ring-fences such vocational drama school training within the industry and outside the main higher education system. So Ben Frankham is saying the sort of key moment here in the early noughties is the publication, so that's 25 years earlier, the publication of Going on the Stage. I'll put a link, if I can figure out how to, at the bottom of the podcast, because you can get the Gulbenkian report, Going on the Stage. It is a completely fascinating document. The main recommendation and result of the Gulbenkian report was to establish the National Council for Drama Training, NCDT, a body made up of interested representatives of the industry, the Actors' Union, Equity, and CDS. NCDT would act as an accreditation as opposed to a validation body, offering a formal seal of approval to those courses predominantly, but not exclusively, within CDS institutions that met predefined criteria and that took regard of recognised industrial demands. The NCDT, in effect, would offer a kite mark of legitimacy and quality, a beacon for the potential student, and perhaps more importantly, the various local education authorities who, under the established system, could offer discretionary awards to students in order that they might pursue training in the performing arts. And this is a really important and brilliant little link there, because we immediately start to understand that the funding of drama school students and the way the drama school defines itself are inextricably linked, and that relationship has been a bit of a dance over the years and continues to be so. And as I think I said earlier in my little rant, my own sort of personal fear is that the accommodation that was made between those, that the sort of the imperative to gain funding for drama school students, has sort of gone wrong. So if it was a sort of accommodation for a long time, and that I think will be talked about in this paper, it's like one of the parties has forgotten that. And so increasingly the drama school behaves as if it were just another sort of department in a university. And I think that could have worked out well, but I think it's disastrous. I think it's disastrous. And I don't think it's good necessarily for certain types of students. Perhaps students who think in a slightly different way. Perhaps people who are in fact artists, and perhaps a faculty who think in a different way. But the only way you can survive is if you can somehow acquire the skills to survive in this very particular system. Anyway. In making this rigid link between training and jobs by aligning itself with the theatre industry in these terms, the CDS felt able to remove itself legitimately from the established higher education sector. I don't think it was in the higher education sector, so I think it means sort of it was able to separate itself from the established higher education sector. Higher education was detached from the workplace and offered paper qualifications that had universal recognition. What need of universal recognition when recognition was not sought from anywhere but the industry in which it already resided? As Christopher Dennis of Bristol Old Vic Theatre School put it, when people leave here, they don't get a diploma, but they do get a job. There is a deeper history of the pursuit of diplomas and sort of academic legitimacy, this is me, in the drama school, sort of pre-1970, or they may have been just lingering into the 70s. There was a diploma, a London diploma, which was sort of set up by RADA and Central in the 1920s or 30s. I'll try and make a little podcast about it. And sort of lingered on for years. And Elsie Fogarty herself had always liked the idea of a university of acting. So although at this point the separation seems clear, and the paper is concerned with the 1970s and onwards, there is a sort of different history. I'm not sure about the rest of the world as well. Anyway. In 1975, not one member of CDS offered a degree in acting. The FDS schools do now, apart from perhaps the Oxford School of Drama, I think, doesn't. Such national awards were seen by the Gulbenkian report as being irrelevant, as there already exists for the students a highly rigorous assessment in the form of catching the eye of visiting directors at public productions and getting jobs in highly competitive auditions after graduation. The report went on. Provided that a school is recognised by NCDT and able to attract financial support either from a local authority or from the DES, the Department of Education and Science, via the Arts Council, it can remain perfectly viable without offering degrees or diplomas. So at this point, that was the situation in the 70s. The Gulbenkian report made a simple distinction between the Conference of Drama Schools, where the bulk of serious drama training takes place, and what it termed the non-vocational provision of university drama departments that have in common, and will continue to have in common, this vital characteristic, that they do not, and are not intended to provide vocational drama training. The report continued. These courses, which will apply the same academic criteria of assessment and selection as, say, history or language courses, will lead to BAs, and it will become as much a matter of routine for civil servants, lawyers, academics, and teachers to have read theatre arts at university as philosophy or English. In practice, it stressed, only a minority of these students do actually go into the theatre. The report concluded that it is vital to any understanding both of the present setup and, more importantly, of the likely future development of drama training to keep this distinction between vocational and non-vocational absolutely clear and in the forefront of one's mind, if confusion is to be avoided. In 1975, few would have seen this distinction or the desire to avoid confusion as an oversimplification. Certainly, the university drama departments seemed quite happy to establish difference. So that's where we were in the 1970s. The Gulbenkian report has come out. The NCDT has been set up. It took a while for the NCDT to actually start accrediting, and then it was quite controversial. And there's a wonderful series of articles and letters and sort of rows in the theatrical press from this period. Accreditation was never an entirely accepted procedure. There were always dissenting voices, and there were some surprises. The school that I currently work at, East 15, failed at the first NCDT sort of test in early 80s, I think. Anyway, Ben Frankham goes on now to look at the university drama department. So I won't read you the whole article, it's substantial, but we'll certainly read this next bit. The first university department of drama in Britain had been established at Bristol University in 1947. But it's fair to suggest that drama as a recognised university discipline did not start to evolve fully until 1960, when Glyn Wickham was granted a chair in drama at Bristol. This was followed in 1961 by the establishing of a chair for Hugh Hunt and a department at Manchester University, and by the establishing of departments at Hull, Birmingham, Bangor, Glasgow, and Exeter. By 1975, several other departments or sub-departments had been established, and the notion of academic theatre studies was widely recognised. In spite of its growth during the 1960s, the state of the university discipline of drama could, during the early 1970s, be best described as circumspect. It had taken until 1970, through the organisation of a symposium at Manchester by Kenneth Richard and Peter Thompson, for the drama departments to come together in a form that would gradually evolve into the rather informal, even by the standards set up by the CDS, Standing Conference of University Drama Departments, SCUD. SCUD still exists. In fact, I got cancelled by SCUD for one of my podcasts. Very fair. They had a hearing. The theme of the symposium, I think I was cancelled for something that was completely true, by the way, but never mind. The theme of the symposium, 19th century British theatre, reflected to some extent the department's evolution from English and modern language departments. Indeed, the defining comments of leading university figures at the time seemed more concerned with clarifying the discipline's position, distinct from its mother discipline of English, but definitely within a predefined university humanities sector. In 1974, Michael Richards conducted a survey of university drama and concluded that all university drama courses were similar and all would fall into the liberal arts humanistic category. That is to say, they do not pursue a purely academic approach to drama on the one hand, nor do they offer vocational training for the theatre on the other. I wonder when, something I don't know when a university first started offering degrees in acting. There, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, there are lots of them now. I wonder when the first one was. I wonder, and who. Richards observed that in order to establish the academic credentials of the department, all courses used extensive formal written examinations as part of assessment, and concluded that all departments struggled with the notion of assessing practical work, with Bangor escaping the difficulty by not assessing practical work at all. In this endeavour, Richards felt that a useful point of guidance was employed within the Glasgow prospectus. A student is assessed not so much on the artistic standard he achieves as on his conscious understanding of the art. Richards warned against university drama's popularity becoming reason for expansion. Indeed, one may fairly be apprehensive about a trend towards a consumer-orientated university and stressed that drama needs to justify itself on its own merits. Such caution towards any notion of expansion, together with traditionally academic definitions of intellectual intent, must have been music to the ears of CDS. Certainly, it confirmed the distinction made between the two sectors in the Gulbenkian report. But was it a false distinction? The polarization of the two neatly defined sectors has led to a lasting determination to pursue pragmatic clarity in separateness over long-term philosophical clarity in integration. In many ways, I think Ben's kind of, here we get Ben Brankham's thoughts. In many ways, the Gulbenkian report's face value acceptance of industrial demands as the central plank for training requirements has relieved CDS from the responsibility of intellectual debate on the future of British acting and British theatre. They have failed to exploit the philosophical opportunities within the radical changes that have been imposed upon them by government policy, denying the empowerment of a broader notion of education and a broader notion of theatre. Shall I read one more bit? I'll read one more bit, because this is quite fun. Change at the drama school. What changes? In the last 25 years, drama schools have changed. By the academic year 1999 to 2000, all CDS institutions were offering some kind of nationally recognised qualification. By the academic year 2000-2001-2002, 15 out of 21 institutions were offering degrees in acting. The gradual rise, a change taking place mainly during the 1990s in the number of degrees in acting, led to a certain amount of debate over possible philosophical changes in the delivery of such courses. Clive Barker, we read Clive Barker's paper, What Training for What Theatre, along with this one, it's an essential read. Adrian Cairns, who wrote a book, and John Russell Brown, don't know John Russell Brown's book, attempted to address the implications of actor training within this high-profile transformation. Many commentators expressed alarm. Barker summed up the central concern. The granting of degree status to acting courses, which include no academic elements, raises the whole question of what a degree is. A different slant on the same concern was raised by those within CDS who pointed to the healthy distinction between craft training and university training. That was Ellis Jones, Vice Principal of RADA. I met Ellis Jones, very nice man. As defined by the Gulbenkian report and fundamental to the NCDT accreditation process. Christopher Dennis, Principal of the Bristol Old Vic School, saw it as a completely contradictory approach to the task. Talking about it, reading about it, theorising about it, but not doing it is the way in the way it needs to be done. Peter James, Principal of Lambda, has continued to stress that universities are academic institutions and the intelligence required of an academic is different to that required of an actor. Indeed, Peter James. I think Ben Frankham spoke about scholarship, study for the actor, what that means, what it means to study as an actor and what it means to study as an academic. Again, really important thoughts, I think, that perhaps we're not really thinking. In spite of these concerns, the progression towards universal degree recognition for actor training has continued unabated. Is it that the views stated above are now minority views and that the process of actor training is seen to be more of an intellectual process? Have the drama schools been working alongside their colleagues in university to realise a fusion of two systems? In short, has the fundamental transformation in the way actor training is recognised resulted in a transformation in the way we actually approach that training? The pioneer of degrees in actor training was Jean-Norman Benedetti, Jean, who in 1976, as the then principal of Rose Bruford College, created the first vocational degree for actors, validated by the Council for National Academic Awards, the CNAA. Benedetti believed that actors and other artists deserve to have the physical and intellectual rigour of their work recognised with a professional qualification. His intention, therefore, was to establish the degree worthiness of predefined actor training, not to change the process. Those who follow in Benedetti's footsteps, who enthusiastically espouse the implementation of degree status for actor training, do so within the context of continued NCDT accreditation. Vladimir Mirodan, principal of the Drama Centre London, suggests that degrees have finally caught up with the high level of training that we are offering. Paul Clements, principal of Mountview Conservatoire for the Performing Arts London, argues strongly that the process of becoming an actor is, in itself, a very complex mixture of acquirable skills, intuition, and the solving of problems by conscious and unconscious means, and that the validation documentation for the Mountview degree tries to quantify this. Mirodan, back at the Drama Centre, calls for greater recognition and consideration of the notion of emotional intelligence as experienced and developed within actor training. He argues that the same quantifiable value needs to be attached to both emotional and intellectual intelligence because they both fulfil the same social function. An emotional process enables people to function at a high level in a social context because they understand problems better, they are able to solve them better, they are able to interact with people better, and they are able to research better because they empathise better. It's a nice thought, isn't it? I'm not sure that actor training does that. It would be nice if it did. But maybe it can. While interesting and intellectually assertive, such attempts to justify the actor training process within degree education do not encourage the view that there has been a change in philosophical approach. Remember, we're in the early noughties. The irony is that any lingering notion within certain drama schools of degree education being simply theoretical and non-vocational is based on the Gulbenkian Report's identification in 1975 of a distinction between the drama schools and university education as defined by the university drama departments. University drama was concerned at that time with establishing serious academic credentials within the traditional university system and had, therefore, a rather myopic notion of degree education that might have overemphasized traditional academic rigour. If the Gulbenkian Report had chosen to look beyond university drama departments in a quest to discover the truth about degrees, it would almost inevitably discovered the existence of polytechnics. Ben Frankham, if you're listening, I think it does talk about polytechnics. I have read the Gulbenkian Report. Maybe he's being a bit sort of rhetorical here and tendentious, but I think the Gulbenkian Report looks at all kinds of things, including schools for training teachers, teacher training colleges, which did a lot of it. Anyway, never mind. The spread of polytechnic. So here we go. So we're introducing the polytechnic. So the polytechnic is sort of entering as a character. The spread of polytechnics in the late 1960s was a tangible attempt to strengthen the vocational quality of higher education and to encourage a broader appreciation of the notion of intelligence and intellectual achievement as quantified by the awarding of degrees. This wide constituency for degree education had been encouraged by higher education reforms within Britain in the 1990s. The Further and Higher Education Act 1992 and the Deering Report of 1997, very important, established a greater emphasis on vocational outcomes within all higher education, abolishing in the process the distinction between polytechnics and universities. The Deering Report has recommended greater interaction, both structurally and intellectually, between institutions from all traditions. And it could be argued that drama schools, in their attempts to attract university validation, are simply concerned with the preservation of their own identity within the current political climate. Indeed, the current political view is to recognise the distinctive nature of drama school education and to fund it accordingly. In the year 2000, the government instigated new student scholarships for training in dance and drama to replace the flawed discretionary grant scheme and guarantees the fees, considerably higher than within the standard university sector for students entering recognised training institutions within the independent sector. These are dadas. Just to mention, this is in the year 2000, the fees at drama schools are higher than universities. It's always worth saying that they're not now, except at a few dada schools. In the vast majority of drama schools, the fees are exactly the same. Something that needs saying, because there's this weird received wisdom knocking around that drama schools are horribly expensive. An entire debate about the cost of higher education, BAs, is completely reasonable and not what I'm doing here. But somebody doing a humanities degree gets a couple of online lectures and a few seminars a week, and they get that for their 9,000 quid. At a drama school, at a BA, you get a full-time education, 5 days a week at least, from 9 in the morning till 6 at night, perhaps. It's actually, in a way, I think you could argue, that the drama school is fantastic value for money. There are problems in terms of equity, I think, especially because being an actor is a precarious tradition, so that's an issue, a profession. And also, I think because, and I think this is really worth thinking about, it's very hard to work and do an acting course at a drama school at the same time. But the idea that drama schools are expensive is a sort of idiotic position. The idea that higher education is expensive is a perfectly valid thing to debate. But drama, I'll just say this one more time to anyone who's listening and hasn't quite realised this. It costs exactly the same amount of money to do a BA at RADA, the world's poshest drama school, as it does to do a BA anywhere else in Britain. Exactly the same amount of money. The difference is you're more likely to get a scholarship and help. That's the main difference. The new government funding scheme is as much reliant on guidance from the predefined industry through NCDT as was the old discretionary grant scheme. All the government requires in exchange is that institutions offer students nationally recognised qualifications. This seems to be at the heart of the softening of criticism within CDS of degree validation for actor training. It's difficult to identify any radical ideology within the seemingly sweeping move towards degree validation in the vocational sector. What exactly has changed? Working towards a degree qualification, the Guildhall School prospectus stresses, will make no difference to your basic training. The course is still intended for those who want to become professional actors and is very different from many university courses in drama, theatre studies or the performing arts. Christopher Dennis of the Bristol Old Vic School, an erstwhile critic of degree validation, has come over to the other side, safe in his belief that degree validators now understand that we are teaching manual skills, like showing an actor how to fall off a wall, not academic ones. Oh, hence the title of the paper, like falling off a wall. I'll read that again. Christopher Dennis of the Bristol Old Vic, an erstwhile critic of degree validation, has come over to the other side, safe in his belief that degree validators now understand that we are teaching manual skills, like showing an actor how to fall off a wall, not academic ones. All these courses remain accredited by the NCDT. For the majority of institutions within the Conference of Drama Schools, the simple definition of intent remains their training stays within the industry and outside the university sector. While CDS has changed little since NCDT was established, remember CDS is the Conference of Drama Schools, since the NCDT was established in 1976, the industry, there's another thought, another character enters, the industry it purports to serve has changed out of all recognition, as has the university sector it chooses to remain distinct from. The drama school's understanding of university drama might not have changed, but the university drama department's understanding of university drama certainly has. Brilliant. Great. So thank you very much, Ben Frankham. I think I'll leave that here. Lots to sort of think about. Very, very helpful. And then I'll read the rest of the paper in a few days' time. So I hope that's been useful. It's a bit dry, isn't it? It's not as much fun as some of the podcasts, but it's really on my mind at the moment. because I think we are designing something or falling into something, accidentally making something which I don't think is very helpful to lots of people. And I think there's a massive ethical question about the number of actors that we're training. 100 BAs in acting is a lot. It's a lot. And I think one of my thoughts is that by the nature of that, by graduating 3,000 plus actors and other, I don't know, what, a couple of thousand from MAs, 5,000 actors a year, of course those actors are not going to enter into a sort of an acting profession. They're not all going to be getting gigs in the National Theatre or making Netflix movies. Of course they're not. That's not possible. There's no way an industry could support that number of graduates every year. So therefore, those people are graduating for something else, or lots of them. And perhaps that's to be creative, fulfilled makers of art. So then the courses are sort of being shaped by the outcome, but the outcome is being predicted by the numbers of courses. And I'm not sure that's an entirely brilliant way to set things up. I mean, it's fine. I guess we'll just keep going. So I think that some of the debates and conversations that are being sort of had, no matter how poorly, in the pages of something like The Stage, are not really asking the right questions. Anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you're having an okay time. I was at home today because of COVID breaking out. Not me, I'm fine. So it's a nice day. I made a podcast. It's lovely to talk to you all. I hope you're safe and well. Sincerely, take care. Bye.